Welcome to Murphy, Sam, and Jody after the show. And I want to use this after the show podcast to be positive and uplifting and share for anybody else that may be having a similar experience with a parent who's ill or has lost a parent. And in the COVID world, there are a lot of people that have, you know, passed on. So I really want to focus there, because if you were listening to the show, or if you listened to the show on the podcast, the regular show podcast, obviously we talked about my dad's passing on this morning's show. Mm-hmm. He was 77 years old, and it was an 8-week battle. I don't even like to use the term battle with lung cancer, because he was so calm and committed through it all. He kept saying, "We're going to do this," and I really believe that, you know, mm-hmm. that he meant that. It just didn't. It didn't turn out that way. And to be honest with you, the last couple of days, this was a more peaceful, you know, place for him to be. But I want to share some of the what I think are just happy moments from that time period, because there's still laughter. You know what I mean? When I was growing up, I think I felt like there were some situations that you just were immediately not supposed to laugh in, or, mm-hmm. you know, that if it's serious, everything's got to be 100% serious. But sure. I think sense of humor creates normalcy. Most of it came from my dad, because he was funny the entire time. I mean,
it's needed.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, he would say, "It is what it is." And he was just, his mindset through this whole thing was mind blowing to me. I don't know how it's possible, unless he just wasn't telling us. He never looked like he had any pain, and he said he was never in pain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, being able to pass peacefully was a real blessing. But, you know, he the whole time, you know, it is what it is. But he would say, "And we're going to do this." But then, you know, the joke was that he said for a long time, "We're going to live until we die," you know.
He also, his other statement, when he said this way before his diagnosis, he used to say, "Yeah, well, none of us are getting out of this alive."
Yeah, right, exactly.
That was one of my favorite things that Dane ever said.
Do you wonder if he kept up that brave face and made the jokes for y'all?
I do.
Because
I think that
obviously you're worried about him. You're not him. You don't know what he's feeling or going through. And then you're constantly worried, and he's throwing jokes at you to, like, "Chill out, everybody. It's cool."
My sister and I, and my brother, as well as we know my dad, we could not. He promised us he was always going to be honest. After my mother passed, he's like, I'm going to tell you everything. You're going to need to know it. You know, I'm not going to surprise you with anything. And so we took those words to the bank, that mm-hmm. he wasn't going to say anything. So I'm not really sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
how much of that was him, his personality?
Yeah.
And how much of that was him being your dad and wanting you to feel okay? Probably a little bit of both. Yeah. He probably didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Right? He probably didn't think about it.
He wasn't a complainer, but I don't think he could have hidden the pain. You know what I mean? If it had been there. And so, you know, again, this was unexpected, because the course of treatment had just begun. It was a brand new treatment that's the FDA only approved in May. And so the treatment itself has a lot of promise, you know, but every patient's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was a stage 4 diagnosis from the doctor when it happened. They never used that term, by the way, just so you know.
It was written.
I found that interesting. It was written in the report, but it wasn't until literally the day before he passed that my sister was looking at something that actually said stage 4.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the terminology with regard to that for, you know, adults is new to me, because I've not experienced that. When I was a child, two of my grandparents passed from it, but we were not really in the know. You know, mm-hmm. my mom passed very suddenly from a heart attack, and so there was a whole lot of learning, you know, to this. And so I think if it had been framed up in that way, there probably would have been maybe more fear. But his support team, the doctors, from Dr. Militello on, were always positive. They were upbeat. They were accessible. And they probably know. They've seen everything.
Yes.
You know, so they know what the risks are. And, you know, they know that it's a balance between providing hope, providing comfort, but providing real information so that you know exactly what you're dealing with. And I think that's what I've been impressed with all along. And here's the other thing about it. In the COVID world, I guess I've been fortunate not to have to go to the hospital in the last year. And I know that nursing staffs and doctors and techs, everybody associated with, you know, working with patients has had a very difficult job this past year with COVID. And when we were in the hospital yesterday in the ER, which we were in the ER until he passed, they explained to us that the ICU beds were all full, and they were all full with COVID patients.
Right.
The hospital was at full capacity, and every ICU bed was a COVID patient. I'm like, wow. And you could see the look of just constant movement and focus and professionalism, but you could see a little bit of fatigue too, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
But I thanked every nurse that I saw and every doctor, because I know that not only for what they did and attempted to do with my dad, but for just taking care of the amount of things that we were seeing in the ER through the window. We were in the room with him. I think they let us in there because he had technically already passed to say goodbye, but to see all the other activity was really, it was something. So it gave me an additional appreciation for anyone who works in the medical community. The paramedics who showed up at my dad's house couldn't have been more professional
and
awesome and calm. Yes.
You don't think of that as a calm situation, because it's not. It's a time-sensitive situation when they showed up. But they were, I had come over too, and they were just so calm and quietly
Jetty,
working.
Jetty had shared that with me, that when they were working on your dad, it was
wasn't
just like
some loud, dramatic.
Quiet, and we got a job to do, and we're going to do
it. And they did it.
Yeah. And they were just incredible. I mean, after the fact, that's the first time I've needed a first responder. That's actually the first time, believe it or not, that I think that's the first time I've ever had to call 911. And we've been blessed not to need a first responder. So that's our first personal experience with that, Jody, really, I think since COVID started too. Think about the risk factors, you know, there also. And I've always known and I've always respected that, but to experience it firsthand, from the paramedics to the 911 operators to the emergency room staff and nurses and doctors and everybody that's doing this every single day, you know, you get a new, you know, piece of gratitude. Now, I'll tell you, my dad probably wouldn't have wanted that many people fussing over him. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. He was a very private person. In fact, we were joking at one point, you know, that he was, you know, telling us, look, I'm trying to leave, guys, and you guys are sitting here trying to hold on to me, you know, but they did, they did a great job. And I know that Jody was impressed with the doctor that really walked in with the most important news.
Okay, so we were in that room. And the story is, this doctor walks in to break down the news of, okay, there's little if no brain activity. You know, he was without oxygen for 20-something minutes this morning before he was brought in here. So after the scan, they're like, there's no brain activity. Now he's on this vent. He's on this breathing machine, basically life support, that's keeping him alive. And we were in the room with him for that. And that's, we were all just standing there. It's like, what do? You don't want to let go. It goes against every instinct that you have to let go, except that, you know. And anyway, this doctor came in, and I thought he was such a good communicator. Mm-hmm. And I thought, there are doctors who are great doctors who do their job well, and then there are doctors who, but maybe don't communicate as well. But he had both.
Yeah.
He told us, he broke down, look, here's what you can do. We can give him medicines, and we can watch this, and we can try to get him back to where he was yesterday. But you have to tell me, is where he was yesterday where you think he'd want to be? He says, and you need to look at this together as a family and say, are you going to push this to see if you can get him there? Is that what he would want? If he could sit in this chair and look at himself, would he want this? And at one point, he also said to you, to all of us, he said, and I didn't think he had to share this, but he did say, because I can tell you, if it were my dad, I wouldn't want him to be this way.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't have to share that, and he didn't do it in a harsh way either.
No, he didn't. He actually only did it after permission. So different states have different laws on what doctors actually can say in that situation.
Sure.
So in some states, they're not even allowed to recommend anything unless you first ask the question. But
right.
they're not going to recommend whether it's time to, you know, in care or if it's time to continue
try harder,
care.
Right,
right, exactly. And so in this case, we told him, I mean, what's your opinion? But he was so, like Jody said, clear and reassuring at the same time. And when the chances, just so you know, Sam, he said that my dad had probably a 1 in 200 chance. That's a 0.5% chance, yeah, of improving. And you know, look, as the day went on, we realized and learned they finished all the scans and those, and we understood those things. And he kept saying that, you know, really, you need to look at it from the, he referred to it as a surrogate standpoint. Mm-hmm. You need to think from his standpoint, if he were sitting in the chair looking back at himself right now, making a decision about what he actually wants, because that's really the most important thing.
Yeah, you need to be
that's the way that you need to, you know, to make the decision.
And that made it more easy.
Yeah, and it did. I mean,
miles.
It was my brother, sister, and I had literally, there was no question, you know, to us. And because knowing where he had been the day before was not a great day for him,
yeah,
at all. And restoring his body to that state would only have prolonged some of the challenges he was facing. So
things that he wouldn't have wanted to go through, or you guys to have to go through with him.
Yeah. So, and when you have a doctor like that, during that time period where your emotions are already clouding everything that you're doing and handling, it's
good.
It's invaluable.
Him. Well, yeah, I told him on the way, I was like, you're a good
in that situation, you're second-guessing everything.
Right.
If I do, then this. If I don't, then that. But if, yeah, I do, then he doesn't have a chance at this. And it's like, it's nice to have somebody to come in there and say, look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. Yeah, he called that the what-ifs, right? Everybody, it's totally normal. Everybody has the what-ifs because, yeah, like Jody said, you're making a decision that seems so counterintuitive to, you know, mm-hmm, but once you really have the facts laid out before you, especially from people who see and do this every single day, you know, that makes a difference. So, I mean, I feel like my dad was surrounded by angels all the way around. I feel like being able to spend the last, you know, 6 weeks, 5 weeks with him every day, for many, many hours every day, was it was a blessing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I knew that was the right thing for me and my sister and my brother to do, but it's really weird how when you look back in hindsight, things actually do work out for a reason. And you know, I'm just glad that he's not struggling anymore. But
have you had a chance to, or has it even occurred to you to go,
not yet. I don't think until we get the services completed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when the services are done, I think that will be the time to move forward. But, you know, so I'm still kind of tense. It's kind of weird. You know, I haven't really been able to let go of that part yet. But I have a newfound respect for anybody who's gone through this with a family member. You know, Jody's grandmother went through this, and so Jody's mom and her siblings experienced dealing with an ailing parent. Mm. But, you know, my mom passed very suddenly of a heart attack, and she had no illness or anything like that. You know, so this is the first time we've had to take care of an ill parent for many, many weeks at a time. And so it's somehow, even though it's the last thing you want to see, it's the last thing you want them to go through, it's almost, you know, without being overly religious, it's almost like God is saying, okay, well, there are the gifts in this. If you just want to take a look at the, you know, the gifts that are part of this, you know, try to focus on that part. And I feel like that's what my sister, brother, and I walked away with. Being at his side in his last moments,
that's
is
look.
A gift.
Yeah.
And
a lot of
so,
people don't get that.
Right, exactly. So anyway, but you know, we're going to move forward. I'm so proud of him. Over the next, you know, coming weeks, all of his funny quips are going to come back.
You know, for the rest of your life,
right,
those are going to come back to you.
I just think, I still think it's cool that, you know, the last time he rode his Harley was about 12, 14 weeks ago, maybe. And he's 77 years old, mm-hmm, getting out there on his Harley.
He'd ride it at sunset.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Oh,
you know,
isn't
doing,
that lovely?
Doing his,
mm-hmm,
rides and you know, doing his thing. And my dad always did that. My dad was just...
He was a peaceful person, a peaceful, yeah, with himself, it seemed, anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when he was focused on something, you know, he would just do it. And that's what he did. You know?
I don't want this to sound too cliche, but were there last words to you?
Yes. So when I arrived at the house, when the emergency happened, he wasn't speaking by that point. I think he was passing at that very moment. And that was before the paramedics got there. The last thing that I was the night before when we tucked him in for bed, and he was grabbed my hand, and we were doing, you know, sort of like that thumb hold thing, and he just looked me straight in the eye and said, "Thank you for everything." And he was shaking my hand and holding it, you know, as tight as he could mm-hmm. at that moment. And I took that to be,
at the time,
I just took that to be, my dad is so gracious and grateful. Mm-hmm. Now,
that's your last.
Now I take that to be, right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is what it is.
Missed any part of the show? Get it all on the Murphy, Sam & Jody podcast.